Welcome to today's segment of Afternoon Satsang. And as we salute to Swami in our studios, in our heart, and offer this segment to Him as we begin it, both me and Prem are very, very happy and very excited to go take on today's topic, because today's topic is a kind of a contemplative one. We will be directing our train of thoughts on life, actually. And that statement holds good literally and metaphorically, because today we are going to discuss on how life is a journey more than a destination. More importantly, we would like to discuss on how considering life as a journey makes a huge world of difference to us, rather than considering it as an end in itself. At an instinctive level and an intuitive level, life definitely seems like a journey, because, you know, each one of us build on certain goals, we have certain plans, we want to reach some things, and that in itself means that we have to travel to that goal, travel to that ambition, travel to that aim, which makes life look like a journey. Therefore, as I said, instinctively and intuitively, life appears like a journey, but we shall see that even logically, taking life as a journey makes a lot of difference to us in our lives. So, all this and much more, but before we delve into that, Sairam Prem, and I'm sure you're also as excited as me about this discussion.
Sairam Arvind, indeed, you know, many times when you talk about spirituality, there's one misconception which we have. When we turn to a spiritual life, let's say that you can probably demark a point in your life and you say that henceforth I've become spiritual, if at all anything like that is possible. Many times people ask, so what should I start doing to lead a spiritual life? You know, what changes should come? And oftentimes we think that those changes are have to be, you know, concrete in the form of actions. Of course, that definitely is there. But more than that, a spiritual life calls for a spiritual perspective, a change in the way you look at things, and continue to do whatever you've been doing, but with an enlightened view about it, or a change in the way you look at life itself.
It's like spirituality is not about how you look, but about how you look at things. You know, it's about change in perspective, and not about the dress you wear, the kind of halo you don on yourself or something like that. Because I'm sure everyone like me and you, in the beginning, when we take steps in the spiritual life, we feel that there are some physical characteristics that we must exhibit in order to even prove to ourselves that we are spiritual. But what you said, yes, it is definitely true, because spirituality is not about how we look, but about how we look at things.
Right. In so many ways, you know, the way we look at things, like suppose I might be doing some task, and if it has been assigned to me, there is a certain amount of burden that the task places on me. But if I'm doing it with a liking, I like to do it, so I'm doing it. So actually, action-wise, there is no change, but the way you look at it, the way you approach it, changes the way you know, you handle the whole situation. Same with everything else, you know, be it a career, or, you know, the classic example is, you know, there's somebody who pays 3,000 rupees and goes to a gym and does the same thing. All my grandmothers would say that. You know, all these youngsters, they go to the gym and do that, and they would say that, instead of that, why don't you sweep the house at home, right? And because here, the same activity which you do seems like a task, a work that you have to do, but there it is like you're doing it for your own benefit. You know,
and it's a privilege that you're able to use those facilities.
Right, and the way that perspective changes everything else. So the way you look at it, what they very often, I think in management, they call the paradigm shift, right? When you start changing the way you look at certain things, your approach will change. And spirituality is all about that. And one of the very, very fundamental ideas in that is, I feel, this concept of how do you look at life? Do you look at life as a place for you to, you know, as your destination? When you say destination, all that I have to enjoy and all that I have to experience is here. Or you see it as a journey where, you know, at the end of this, or probably after a long cycle of this, you reach your destination.
In other words, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of difference we can see in our life depending on whether we consider our birth as the culmination of a journey, or whether we look at our birth as the beginning of a journey. if we think of it as culmination of the journey, then it's like we arriving in paradise and here we are to have a ball of a time and leave, because with birth our whole journey is complete, whatever, from a single cell to what we are today. The other way of thinking is, with birth now the journey has begun, and it will continue through this life, and therefore I have not yet arrived unless I have done something, and it leads us to think about what we need to do so that we have truly arrived at our destination.
Right. I mean, basically, if you look at the modern way of looking at it, it comes from apparently a logical idea. Now, if I have to tell you that, don't worry, this is one of your 1,000 births, there is a chance that a person might not be able to accept it, because I know only of this birth. Even if you say that I've lived 100 births before, why is it that I don't have memory of it? And it doesn't appear like we are old in that sense, right? You know, we have gone through the period of ignorance and learning, and then we are learned, and then you, as old age approaches, you're experienced. You don't feel, you feel like this is a fresh life altogether. So where is that question of you having lived so many lives? And when you don't see that you have lived many lives, you find it like, yeah, this is where we have come to enjoy life, right? But that's where I think wisdom comes in play, where if you look at spiritual masters, they will look at life and say that, but so many aspects of life cannot be explained without a theory like this, that you are a soul which is traveling through many bodies.
You know, the other day, I got the opportunity to speak with our convocation guest, this year's convocation guest, I think Mr. Chidambaram, Professor right. Chidambaram. He actually, you know, is a kind of atheist in his beliefs, but he definitely acknowledges the existence of consciousness, and he also believes, if I can say, in the karma theory. So I was very surprised as to how can an atheist believe in the karma theory, and that is when his wife also joined into the conversation, and what she said was very interesting. She said, you see, it's all about feeling good and feeling peaceful. Without the karma theory, so many things are unexplained and you feel so much at unease. You are not at ease, and because things look very random. The karma theory puts everything into place and it gives you comfort, it gives you peace. So why not accept it? It is something that's giving you peace. So simply for that reason, we accept it. That's what she said, and it was a very interesting thought. So, like as you said, so many things in life gets explained once we accept this concept that this is not just the only birth that we are having. This is one among the several births we have had and several births we are going to have. So that is a source of so much of comfort and peace to so many things that we see in life. One of the foremost things being why good things happen to bad people,
right.
Bad things happen to good people. I think we have had a satsang on that.
Exactly. I mean, because nothing explains this better than, I remember, Brother Amai was telling, you know, a conversation which I think his uncle had with his cousin or something like that, he was sharing once, where he said, this youngster said that, I don't believe in the karma theory. Okay, and then the father challenged him, okay, you come up with your own theory, and let's see how much it is far from the karma theory. Right?
So your own theory to explain this.
Explain this whole idea of life. And he said that how much ever you try, that almost 80 to 70% of whatever theory you come up with will be similar to the karma theory, right? And whatever understanding we have of the karma theory also should be not complete. I'm sure we also know only 80% of what the karma theory is. According to our level of understanding, we grasp it to that extent. But that is what it is. You need an explanation such as this. And that's why, you know, way back in Vedanta, when people talk of religion being irrational or unscientific, I think they should go back and read Vedanta. Because it was Vedanta which said that if you say, I will believe only in what I see, what I experience, then you're being very childish, right? Because your perception is so limited. That's why they said there is so much you can understand by extrapolation, by deciphering from others' experience.
That is the birth of the pramanas, right?
Right, the pramanas or the ways of looking at
deriving proof.
Right, deriving proof. They say pratyaksha pramana is the lowest, where you say, I believe only what I see. You know, even science does not believe in an approach such as that. They, I mean, I think 80% of what we know in science today has been extensions of what is known.
As right. Newton said, I have been able to see the stars because I have stood on the shoulders of giants
exactly.
before me.
We accept somebody else's experimentation and proof.
Work.
And we build on that, right? So, that's what the ancients came to this understanding that you cannot explain much of life if you don't accept this fact that you are journeying through many lifetimes. In the moment you say that you are journeying through many lifetimes, you consider this life as a journey. And I think we will discuss as to what happens when you are firmly placed in this belief that life is a journey.
You know, let me take you back to the year 2012 or 2012. You know, that year during the convocation, the students of the university put up a drama called Divya Yatra.
Mm-hmm.
It was very interesting because the entire drama was about life being a train journey.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so beautifully they presented a person's travel through a train in India, and all the dialogues were loaded and impregnated with meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Every situation that happens there corresponded to a situation that happens on the Indian trains,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time corresponded to situations in life. It was a very enlightening and amazing drama, though it took something very commonplace as traveling in a train for a journey. And I feel we should take some inspiration from that drama definitely when we go ahead with our discussion here, because a train is a journey and at the same time it symbolizes the journey of life. To start off with, you know, if we take in all the different metaphors and puns, it all starts off with a quest for a birth. You know, in a train, it's a B-E-R-T-H birth,
mm-hmm.
whereas in life, it's a B-I-R-T-H birth. It is not easy to secure that birth because there's always a large number of passengers eager to get onto the train, and reservations for the journey begin much before the actual date of journey. And you know, you see that with this knowledge of karma theory, that's what is happening. In both the cases, there is a reservation for this journey. So much so that when one gets a confirmed ticket, one is literally overjoyed. I would like to quote Swami here, Jantunam Narajanma Durlabham. Once you get a human birth, it's the greatest among all births. You know, and that's what it is. When you get a confirmed ticket, you get overjoyed. Because ticketless traveling is a strict no-no, and those who don't get a confirmed ticket can try for the next train. Read that as another lifetime. Or you can get into a waiting list, hoping that somebody will hop out of the reservations so that you can hop in. Now, what is this waiting list? You see, if you see the trains, actually, there are some people who are considered special by society. Ministers, educationists, administrators, rulers. You know, these are all people who actually help society a lot. Society benefits by them. And as a token of gratitude for what they do, they are given a reserved berth on this train. They can arrive any moment they want. Only if they choose not to travel, these berths get released for the common man. And those who wish to get into the train via such berths, they constitute a waiting list. So you see, even in life, some reservations are made for those beings who have done so much good that this universe, cosmos, pays its gratitude to them via this birth. So, being good and noble might not actually be a prerequisite when it comes to normal trains, but it is strictly adhered to when it comes to the train of life. You know, when we go on like this and like this, we will realize that seeing life as a journey gives us so many advantages. And it gives us so many examples and similes that are so close to life that we can learn lessons from and enhance our own lives in the process.
Exactly. I mean, let's probably start with what a famous quotation that Swami himself gives. Right? And probably I'll narrate that with a short story. It's a very beautiful little story. You might have narrated this before.
Mm-hmm.
Where there is this rich man who is going on a pilgrimage. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Going from you know, all these Rishikesh and Kashi and all these places. He comes by and he sees this sadhu who is sitting there in a corner and, you know, hardly wearing any clothes, just sitting on the bare floor and has no possessions, whatever, just probably a kamandalu or something like that. So this man goes to him and, you know, when you're a worldly man, you have much to protect, right?
Correct.
You gathered so much. So anywhere there can be a shower of grace, you go and fall at that person's feet. And, you know, whatever grace you can pick on the way, why miss that chance? So he goes and falls at this the feet of this, yogi who is sitting there. And then he very humbly asks a question. He said, aren't you having too little to live your life like this? I mean, is that all you have? Just that kamandulu and that stick and nothing else.
Hmm.
He said, yeah, these are my possessions. I don't have anything more. So he said, how can you live like this? I mean, this is so little to go by. So then that man looks at this traveler, and he's having this small bag, probably like a briefcase or something when you're traveling, right? So he looks at him and says, is that all possession you've got? No, you don't seem to be having much too. You know, you're having so less that you're able to carry it in one hand. So then this man says, no, Guruji, this is just my, travel luggage. You know, I'm just carrying a little bit for my travel. My possessions are there in my hometown. Mm. You know, I have a double-storied house, I have 3 cars, and I have so much wealth in that and all that. Because I'm traveling, I'm carrying less.
Mm.
So immediately the yogi laughs and says, same here, son. Even I'm traveling, so I'm having less. Right? Then that's the quotation I was saying when Swami says, less luggage, more comfort makes travel a pleasure. The moment you look at life as a journey, the moment you look at life as a travel, then the way you look at pleasure changes, right?
Hmm.
The way you look at pleasure is an optimum amount of luggage that you carry, so that too less is an inconvenience and too much is also a burden, right? So the way you look at pleasure in that life also changes when you say life is a journey.
Instead of pursuing your wants, you start taking care of only your needs.
Right.
That's how you do when you go on to a journey. And you know, when you consider life as a journey, another important perspective change that comes in is, you see, in the train also, we have 3 different kinds of birth. We have a lower birth, a middle birth, and an upper birth.
Right.
In life, we somehow give importance to upper birth. We say he's a high birth. You know, a higher birth is considered as a more greater blessing compared to a lower birth. But once you get inside the train, you realize that it is foolish to think that an upper birth indicates superiority over a middle or a lower birth. In fact, you know, if you see, look at the train statistics actually, many passengers pick a lower berth in spite of it having a lowly name, because it is definitely more comfortable in context of the entire train journey. You know, when I think of it metaphorically, I am reminded of Mother Kunti, who prays to Lord Krishna and says, Lord, fill my life with only difficulties and troubles, so that I think of you always. Because for my journey of life, thinking of you is more important than me enjoying stuff. So also, you know, though an upper birth carries the name of an upper thing and a lower birth is a lower thing, if you have done your reservation, you know that given a choice, given a preference, you would choose a lower birth because it's more convenient, more comfortable. It looks like it's only the kids who seem to like the upper berths, because they can jump and frolic up there, you know, feeling superior to those sitting below. But then, well, you can't help that. Kids are immature. Kids are immature, and it's only the immature ones that consider an high class birth or a high caste birth or a birth in an advanced country as a greater blessing compared to a lower birth. Because the point is that irrespective of the birth that you have got, upper, middle or lower, it is indicative of only your elevation in the train. It has got nothing to do with the actual journey. Because all the births are headed towards the same destination anyway. And unless you choose to get off the train in between, you are sure to reach the goal irrespective of the height of your birth. Right?
Exactly. I mean, it just comes to what we call prioritization, you know. First of all, you need to get to where you have to get.
Mm.
And next comes convenience, right? When you say that lot of people choose the lower birth, the reason is convenience. You know, it's more convenient if you have a lower birth. You can get in and get off easily and all of that. Of course, when you talk of different modes of transport, probably it'll be different the way you look at it. I mean, even in if you look at a flight travel, right?
Mm.
If you're traveling for the first time, you'll want to sit next to the window. If you're traveling for the third or fourth time, you'll be looking for the aisle seat.
Exactly.
Because it's easier to, move out and move in.
Right? And visit the restroom.
Right. So the thing is, all the time what we're trying to do is, there is a balance between convenience and a little bit of comfort, right? Or pleasure, if you're traveling for the first time, you want to have a good view of the world from up above. But all the time, you're trying to balance out things between convenience and pleasure, as long as the journey is going to take you to where you want to take you to. And simplest example, which I was just telling you some time back, is like, you know, I want to go from here to Bangalore. I go to the bus stand. The first thing I will do is I will look for buses which are going to Bangalore.
Hmm.
Right? I'll go to that section of the bus stand where you have buses going to Bangalore. And only after that, I will see within the buses parked there which is more comfortable.
Correct.
It would be stupid of me to walk into the bus stand and say which is the most comfortable bus around here. And I'll get into that and go wherever the bus is going. Right?
Absolutely.
Right? So that prioritization is first that destination where I have to go. That is one thing. And the second thing is after that comes the balance between pleasure and convenience. And that's why Swami says, you know, what is the point in carrying so much luggage that it ends up becoming an inconvenience to you? And once it becomes an inconvenience, where's the question of pleasure at all?
You know, what you said reminded me of a very poignant statement that Bhagwan made, I think, during the 1970 Guru Purnima discourse.
Mm-hmm.
In that he said that for a Sai Bhakta, what is more important is the objective and not the object. I mean, when you say that you don't look at the most comfortable bus and say that wherever it is going, I'm ready to go, it just means that when you're looking at life as a journey, the objective of the journey is more important than what you, you know, objects that you get along the journey. I was reminded of an incident here, you know, of a devotee. His name is Harihara Krishnan, and he had a very, very amazing and interesting experience, because he was in the early 1990s, he was in Kuwait, and this was the time when Iraq invaded Kuwait, and he was in a position which was of great importance for the invading Iraqi armies. And it's an amazing tale how he got out of Kuwait and became the first Indian to step onto Indian soil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that story I think is documented as a 4-part article in Radio Sai. You know, you just have to go to the Radio Sai site and search for the term Harihara Krishnan Kuwait War. The whole story will come. But I want to focus on one little episode that happened. You know, when they were traveling out of Kuwait in a car and they entered Iraq. They entered Iraq and it had been a long journey of more than 12 hours, and they were tired, they were hungry, they were thirsty, there were some children with them. So they thought of going and buying some water. Now, the Kuwaiti currency, Kuwaiti dinar, is almost worth 10 times more than the Iraqi dinar. And Hari uncle had with him a full bundle of Kuwaiti dinars, you know. So on any other day, that bundle was worth enough to take you on a world tour.
Mm-hmm.
That is the amount of money that was there. So he walked up to this store, the department store that was there, and he gave out a 20 dinar note, and he said, I want 20 bottles of water, I want some 20 packets of biscuits, and he bought so many things. He was worried whether that person would look at him suspiciously for giving him a Kuwaiti dinar, you know, but that person went ahead, gave him back a huge load of change in Iraqi dinars.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, he even got Iraqi currency with him. And just as he was about to leave the counter, he saw a Kuwaiti national walk in. A person, a person of Kuwaiti origin. You know, he with his wife and a kid, he walked in and he asked for the same water. Water and biscuits. And he says that the reaction of the storekeeper was so drastically different. The storekeeper said, sir, please get away from my store right now. Simply because he was a Kuwaiti, you know, and that storekeeper had a fear that if, you know, I do anything to help a Kuwaiti, I will face the ire of Iraq, Saddam Hussein, the person who was ruling there. And therefore, he was not at all ready to give him water and biscuits. Now, this Kuwaiti man was desperate. He pulled out a wad of notes that was double in size of the wad of notes that was in Hari uncle's pocket, which means this wad was enough to take him around the world twice. You know, and he said, you take this whole thing, just give me some water and biscuits. The man still refused. And then Hari uncle saw a scene that one rarely gets to see in their life. This man opened up a suitcase that he had brought, and guess what? The suitcase was packed to the brim with Kuwaiti dinars.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you take all this if you want, just give me food and water. And even at this offer, you know, this person just said no. You turn away and he said, if you stay here for another moment, I am going to call the police. The moment he heard the word police, this Kuwaiti man turned to run and escape. And Hari uncle, you know, he was saying that he saw a very poignant scene. He saw that this man quickly put the bundle of notes back into the suitcase, zipped up the suitcase, clutched it below his arms and ran along with the suitcase. And Hari uncle said that at that moment I got tears in my eyes. You know, I thought, Swami, what is the use of earning currency which doesn't have value? And having had such an experience, that man is still clutching at that. That man is still clutching at that suitcase of money. What is the use of that money? You know, it is not going to help you in any way. This kind of realization, you know, it made a deep impact on Hari uncle, because the decision he took after that, you know, after he came back from Kuwait, he just quit his job. He said, what is the use of pursuing wealth or anything like that? My life is meant for the pursuit of Sai, and I will pursue only Sai. And, you know, this was in the early 1990s. It's been more than two decades since. Let me tell you, from a material and worldly point of view, he is leading a very comfortable, happy life. But most importantly, he is leading a life of great peace and solace. And we meet Hari uncle every now and then when he comes to the studios. You can see how he radiates contentment and peace. See, this is what happens when you realize that life is a journey. When you realize that the objective is more important than the object. And only when such a wisdom can seep in only when you see life as a journey that goes on across lifetimes. And when that wisdom seeps in, you will stop giving importance to objects, because objects just come and go. Like in that case of that Kuwaiti man, a bag full of dinars was of no use. What becomes most important is your objective in life.
Exactly. It's a typical example which I think we all in India can relate to right now, of money suddenly becoming
yes.
valueless. Because, you know, technically speaking, going back to the history of money itself, you know, that what we call the currency which we hold in our hand, it's typically called an IOU or a promissory note.
It's like a interest-free debt.
Right. It's basically a piece of paper which says that if you bring this to us, we will give you gold worth that much.
Correct.
That's the basic idea of a currency note. And, I mean, that piece of paper gets value because we are attaching value to it, right? Because we have imaginarily attached a certain amount to it, and everybody is universally attaching the same value to it. Like for in India, if I have a 500 rupee note, everybody in the town attaches the same value to that 500 rupee note, and that is why I'm able to transact to it. So suddenly a piece of paper becomes valuable because we imaginarily attach something to it. And overnight it becomes valueless because the government decides to take away the value from that piece of paper, right? And in a situation like what you narrated, a war, or sometimes we see that during inflation, suddenly the money, you know, that unit becomes valueless because of the expenses going up in the country.
What happened to the Zimbabwean dollar?
The Zimbabwean dollar in Hungary, I think it happened once earlier. Percentage of inflation going up, you know, some things like that.
Coincidentally, I have with me a $500 billion note.
My God.
Zimbabwean dollar note, and I bought it off eBay for $1.
Right. So suddenly you see that, you know, that is actually the basic idea behind what we're saying, that you should see life as a journey, because life gets its value because you attach it to something which is beyond just life, right? Just like how a piece of paper gets value because you attach it to something beyond just that piece of paper.
Correct.
And that is why you will not start looking at life in a small way. It's not like once you see life as a journey, you'll take life easy, or you'll start giving less importance to aspects of life. No, you'll actually give more importance to aspects of life, because now this life is being attached to something which is much, much more superior than just one life can stand for. Right? I think that is another thing which comes from looking at life as a journey towards a destination which is far more greater than any one lifetime can, connote.
And, you know, going by that same flow of thought, when you're taking life as a journey, like when we visit some other place, it's not as if every, it's an, we visit a new place because it'll offer us new experiences, it offers us new sights, it offers us new things that our senses can indulge in. It is not as if I would like to carry everything back along with me. I know it's a journey, and therefore I possibly will just pick up a few souvenirs or a few mementos to just give me memory of that journey. But in life, you know, we get into this thing of hoarding, carrying. In fact, Swami would give the example of a rat. He would say, have you seen what a rat does? It will come, it will find a piece of battery, it will take it, go put it in its house. It will go find a piece of string, it will take it back to its house. It will go find something else, it will take back to its house. It's whatever, its bill, you know, its little hole there. You dig up a rat's hole, you will come to see all sorts of junk in there, you know. Which you will wonder, hey rat, how are you ever going to use all these? Why have you accumulated this? The rat itself doesn't know. And Swami says our human mind is like that. It has a tendency to get attached, to go pick up everything and everything it wants to accumulate. Whether it's useful to it or not also, it doesn't discriminate. That is why it's not enough that you follow the mind. Swami, that's why he says you have to master the mind and be a mastermind. And in order to master the mind and be a mastermind, considering life as a journey becomes very, very helpful, because we accumulate only when we think that this is our destination. This is my house. Now get in the furniture, move in the television, move in this, move in that. I start accumulating.
Right.
But when I'm on a journey, at best, I pick up a few souvenirs as memory, but I don't accumulate. So I see that is another big advantage of considering life as a journey.
Right. In fact, you know, even as you're saying, I'm reminded of what Swami had told one of the lecturers.
Hmm.
Apparently, this lecturer had just got married and he took Swami's permission and he went to his, I think, wife's hometown or something like that.
Hmm.
Or on some particular journey, I'm not clear of that, where they had to go and stay in a hotel or a lodge or something like that. So they went, they stayed there for 3 or 4 days and then they came back.
Hmm.
And he had to report to Swami that he has returned after his journey. And Swami asked him about the trip and where did you stay and all that. And he said, Swami, I stayed in a hotel like this. So then Swami asked him, how was the room? And so he, I think, started describing the room. There was a bed and there was a huge window and all that. So Swami asked him, so when you left the hotel, after you wound up and you surrendered the keys, did you take the bed sheets and pillow covers and the curtains hanging in the room? So he said, no, Swami, I can't do that, right? I just paid for staying there. I can't take all these things. Then Swami asked him, why didn't you do that? You know, because the room was there for you to use. You could have taken whatever was there. So he said, no, Swami, that's not right. And Swami said, see, life is also like that. You come into life, everything there is in life, you can use it as long as you are here. But you use it with the idea that this does not belong to me. I can use it for my convenience and be completely prepared to leave everything behind and go. Right? Swami so beautifully told him from that one night or couple of nights stay in a lodge. Swami said, see, that's how your attitude towards life will be. Anyway, you're not going to carry it for. It's not like even if you want, you can carry it. But what is the point in living with the attitude that all of this belongs to me, right? You know you're not able to take it along, so why not bring that attitude even when you're living? That's what Swami had told him.
This actually takes me back to what we started off with, the train journey. See, even in the train, if you see, especially in Indian trains, that's why I said relevant to Indian trains, we have the first class compartment, the two-tire air conditioning compartment, the three-tire AC compartment, then we have the general compartment, then we have the, you know, sleeper compartments. There are at least 5-6 different categories based on the luxury levels. And the prices vary like that. While the cheapest ticket for a particular place might be like 150 rupees, the costliest in that same train will be about 2000 rupees. And the moment you look at life as a journey, see how it changes, because it doesn't matter whether, you know, I'm in a AC compartment or I'm in a sleeper compartment, because what varies is just the degree of comfort, but the destination is same. There are sections that offer better facilities and greater comforts during the journey. If you ask why this discrimination, you can call it karma if you please, but those people in these sections of the train have paid greater amounts, and read that as good deeds, have paid greater amounts during the reservation. So therefore, the difference in one's bank balance is what creates the difference on board the train also. That should be a strong motivation for all of us to earn more. But the wise realize, see, that is earning more. See, that is why we try to do good deeds. We want to do good deeds to earn more good deeds so that we face good in life. That is one level. But the wise realize that the luxury is no big deal, because as in the case with the upper berth or lower berth, all the classes of compartments too are headed to the same destination. So irrespective of the bank balance, one has to travel the entire journey anyway. So though a healthy bank balance can make your journey comfortable, you have to realize that the bank balance is not the only way in which you can make this journey. Once you get this kind of realization, I think we will stop hankering after accumulating and gathering like what the rat does.
Right. And in fact, even as you were saying that, the moment you give more importance to the destination, there is a certain amount of detachment which automatically comes in the comforts which are related to the journey, right? You know, if you're so desperate to reach, I mean, you don't even mind having an RAC. I don't mind sitting and going. It's okay. Yeah, lying down and having a berth is, of course, the most comfortable thing. But if there's an emergency, I would rather go in a stuffed train.
Exactly.
I remember that many of the times we used to do that, you know, when we were studying in the hostel and suddenly we have to go home. Overnight, you just catch a train and go. There are times when you have to stand and go all the while. But if your need to reach that destination is so strong, you don't mind that discomfort, and you also feel that it's after all just a journey of overnight. And if you look at it, many of these devotees who came to Swami in the 1940s, how did they brave the journey which was involved? It was only because they knew what was waiting on the other side of the journey, right? When they knew that they're going to go and see Swami. For instance, we've mentioned it so many times when we spoke to Prema Bose, the daughter of Kamla Sarathy, and they came from all the way from Delhi.
Delhi, yes.
Right? And they were literally living in Lutyens' Delhi, where all the bureaucrats and the main government officials stay. That's like the most upscale living in India.
Mm.
And from there, to take a train and land up in Penukonda at 2 o'clock, they wake up the bullock cart fellow and come to Bukapattam and ask him to cross the river and come. And they would say that so many times they would have their luggages floating on the water, because they would put it on the bullock cart and the bullock cart is supposed to cross the
river, but sometimes,
right? And sometimes the
water level
is too high. Then they would have to swim around catching the luggage and all of that. I think that comes because you know that at the end of the journey, there is something which is far more superior than all the discomfort you face during the journey. And that is, again, a point, as you're saying, that yes, you definitely look for a third AC, second AC, or whatever is the comfort level. But also, the more you are keen on making the journey, the less importance or less relevance it will be whether you have that kind of comfort or not.
Yes, going back to the same example you had given of the bus, suppose you don't get a ticket in the air-conditioned compartment, would you prefer to take a ticket in an air-conditioned compartment of a train that is going elsewhere? No way. What is more important is where you are headed to. And once we realize that the destination for our life, Swami himself has said, it is not something that we have to discover, because if we have faith in Swami, Swami has given us. What is our destination? Our destination is our source. Swami says, like a letter must have a to address and a from address. Because even if your to address is wrong, at least the letter will go back to where it came from, to the from address. And Swami says, in life, the beautiful thing is the to address and from address is the same. Because you have come from the source and you are headed back to the source. Swami says, if you don't know both, then what happens? Swami says, the letter goes to a dead letter office. In the sense, it's just destroyed and nothing happens. It doesn't reach. It doesn't go to the source, nor does it go to the destination. And Swami says, when you have the same source and same destination, you should either know where you came from or you should know where you're headed to. And for both, the answer is same. That is God. We have come from Swami. That is what even the tiny primary school kid would say, I remember one little incident where Swami called this boy and asked him, where have you come from? And this little boy said, I have come from Swami's lotus feet. He said like that. Swami was so happy. Swami said, see, he has come from Swami's lotus feet. And nearby were the institute students and us school students. And this we registered, And Swami immediately asked one more student there, where do you come from? this boy, you know, he went on his knees and he said, Swami, from your lotus feet. Swami said, hey, where do you come from? Swami, from your lotus feet, Swami. Hey, Swami said, Swami, Bombay, Swami. You know, it instantly changed. So you see, there's a difference between believing what you say and saying it for like a parrot. But coming to the point, Swami has emphasized over and over again that we have come from Swami, we have to reach back to Swami. And that is why, you know, that is why possibly when you said Mrs. Kamala Sarathy, they braved such things. Yes, they had to reach Swami. So it doesn't matter if they have given up the most luxurious bungalow in Luton's Delhi. Doesn't matter if all the luggage that they have packed has just got drenched in Chitrati and got washed away. Nothing matters because finally I have to reach Swami. You know, this kind of attitude comes when you're looking forward to the ultimate destination and treat your entire life as a journey. I might get a little health problem there. I might get a major health problem there. I might have a relationship entanglement somewhere. I might have a financial crisis. But you know, all this doesn't matter because it's just a journey. Just like you said, when I have to go to Bangalore in a hurry, I have to reach my mother. Or I have to travel from Bangalore, I have to reach Puttaparthi. I don't get a seat, I have to stand, I get leg pain. No problem if I get leg pain, because for me, reaching Swami is important. I think if we can develop that attitude that life is a journey, one thing that will surely stop is we complaining. Because it doesn't matter, because after all, this is a journey. And I don't mind bearing any hardship, because I know my destination is awesome. My Swami is waiting for me at my destination.
Yeah, I remember this clearly, not exactly to the extent of the people who came in the 1940s. Mm. But you know, when we were in Vrindavan and we used to come to Parthi, we used to have those buses, those rickety KSRTC buses. We used
yes,
to come
ordinary in, buses.
Right, ordinary buses. And even for that, there would be a lot of rush. You know, people would want to sit in the front and towards the window seat and all of that. I mean, we were all, I think, kids, little grown-up kids, that's all. And, you know, that excitement would always be there. And, you know, catching places.
We would
places,
throw our handkerchiefs right, into the windows.
And for your friends and all that. I remember, you know, one thing what one of the teachers told us that time. And it really struck me when he said, see, here is the bus. And this bus is going to take you to Swami, right? Your destination is so exciting. You're going to go and at the end of this journey, you're going to see Swami. I mean, don't you think that should be the excitement topmost on your mind rather than, oh, I'm going to enjoy this journey, I'm going to sit with my friends, I'm going to chat all the way for 3 hours, or even if you're saying I'm going to do bhajans for 3 hours here. And he said that should not be the primary excitement for you. The primary excitement is I'm going to go and see Swami. How good it would be if you can spend this entire 3 hour journey with that thought topmost in your mind. And I said, you know, that's such a beautiful thing to do, and that's what exactly we need to do. You know, we don't know when we're going to reach Swami or when we're going to reach the destination. But the very thought that this is a movement towards that destination, how much joy it should fill you with. And that joy should be higher than any other joy, than the joy of traveling in a comfortable bus, or the tidbits you're going to eat on the way, or the chit-chat that you're going to do on the way, right?
Absolutely. At this point in time, I think, Prem, we will take a little break. Dear listeners, don't go anywhere, because we will come back after this break and conclude this discussion, which is very enlightening for both of us as much as it is for all of you. We will now play a song taken actually from that very drama that we made reference to in the beginning, that Divya Yatra. And for those who understand Hindi, the meaning will be very poignant and wonderful. Hope you enjoy this song. At the end of the song, we'll be back. Don't go away anywhere.
ये समय का पहिया चलता ही जाए, ये समय का पहिया चलता ही जाए, तेरी प्रगति ही पहचान रे, चलता जा इंसान रे, तो चलता जा इंसान, चलता जा इंसान रे, तो चलता जा इंसान, ऊपर वाला साथी तेरा, ऊपर चलता जा इंसान चलता जा इंसान रे तो चलता जा इंसान तू क्या लाया क्या है तेरा धन दौलत आंखों का अंधेरा मन की तृष्णा दूर न जाए मन की तृष्णा दूर न जाए लोभ की गठरी भरती जाए लोभ की गठरी भरती जाए खाली हाथ सभी को जाना खाली हाथ सभी को जाना तू कितना भी धनवान रे चलता जा इंसान रे तू चलता जा इंसान चलता जा इंसान रे तू चलता जा इंसान जीवन बादल की छाया सा मिट जाए कठिन ये अवसर तूने पाया कठिन ये अवसर तूने पाया क्यों बनता तू अनजान रे चलता जा इंसान रे तू चलता जा इंसान चलता जा इंसान रे तू चलता जा मेला है जग का क्यों जीता मगरूरी में श्रद्धा दीप जला ले मन में श्रद्धा दीप जला ले मन में मालिक मिले सबूरी में मालिक मिले सबूरी में खुदी में ढूंढे खुदा मिल जाए खुदी में ढूंढे खुदा मिल जाए ये समझ ले तू नादान रे चलता जा इंसान रे तू चलता जा इंसान चलता जा इंसान रे तू चलता जा इंसान
That was the song from that drama. I think that's a drama which is still there on YouTube. If any of our listeners are interested, they should go and see that. It's a very beautifully staged drama. In fact, many of the things which we're saying, even about that luggage which becomes an inconvenience, there is a scene where a rich man comes in with a number of pieces of luggage and he's causing an inconvenience to everybody. And then finally, there's somebody who asks him that, okay, if you have any unimportant luggage, you can give it to me. I'll keep it in my place. Mm. So then he gives a piece of luggage which says, okay, this is unimportant. And that man throws it out of the window. He says, because what is the point in carrying luggage which is unimportant? Right? So when there is something that you can let go of it. And it again goes back to that same idea as to what you can carry, you know, across Because simple thing is, I think all of us would have traveled, and especially if you travel across the border, if you go to a different country, there is a very limited number of things that you can carry across the border, right? What is the point in shopping endlessly and coming to the customs and not being able to clear it and get it across? So it is meaningless to carry or pick up such things in your journey which you cannot carry it forward. And Swami says there are some things which, whether you want it or not, gets carried forward. And you should be careful about that. And I think that is what is you were referring to as, you know, the good action that you do is so very important, right?
Absolutely. You know, I personally had this experience when we were going to Thailand, found some really wonderful bananas, you know, long bananas which looked yellow and beautiful, wonderful. So just bought a bunch of it, but as we went there to the immigration, they said, no, on the flight it will not be allowed, just throw it. They just threw it off. And I was feeling bad. I was thinking, don't throw it at least, man. You take it out of the airport, there are so many beggars, you know, somebody you can give. That's anyway a different story. But then I realized how foolish it was, you know, whether I had bought 10 bananas or 1,000 bananas. If I'm not allowed to carry it across there, what's the use of buying the bananas? And in the same way, you know, I'm reminded of the story that Swami would say of Alexander. Swami says that Alexander set out to conquer the world, but when his last moments came, he had a very strange request. And what was the request? He said that in my coffin, let there be two holes made on the sides, and let both my hands stretch out of the coffins, of the coffin, out of the two holes of the coffin. And he said that I want this to be done because people should know that the great Alexander who conquered the world now leaves the world without carrying anything with him. You know, that was the realization that Alexander got at the end of his life. And I'm sure that this is a realization that many people get at the end of their life. At the end of their life, or possibly towards the later part of their life. That's why, you know, in the mandir, a very common scene that would happen is Swami would ignore a VIP or a minister or some businessman who has come, and he would purposely ignore and come and walk towards the students and start chatting with the students. Not something of great vital importance as such, you know, he would be speaking about what was there for breakfast and what was the class and, you know, just casual things. And to a casual observer, this would look like a way in which Swami is showing his importance. You know, that I don't talk with you, but I'm coming and just talking casual things with the students. But a wise observer will realize that through this, Swami is giving this very important message. You know, Swami is showing that, see, you are, you know, you students, especially because I'm saying this because Swami would come and talk to the students especially. So it was almost like saying, you students are doing your MBA degrees, you're doing this because you have built your objectives, you have built your goals, you want to earn this much money, you want to get into this powerful position, you want to get into this position of influence. These are the things that you aim for as you're studying. And Swami is saying, you want money, you know, that person sitting there waiting for me, you know how much money he has got? But after having all that money, what has he done? He has come to me with his hands outstretched. You want power, you know the person sitting there, how much power he has got? He's a minister, and even prime ministers have come, presidents have come. How much power he has got or she has got, and yet you know what he or she is doing? Come to me with their hands outstretched. Because dear little one, irrespective of how much power, how much money, whatever you gain, the ultimate thing that you are seeking, you will get only by stretching out your hands in front of me. So why do you want to go behind something that is useless and then come back and stretch your hand? Why don't you be wise enough and directly stretch your hand when I'm there giving myself to you? Now when we look at, now when I think back at those scenes, because I feel very emotional, because I was one of those guilty people, Prem, thinking that look at the way Swami is showing his importance. Today I just get tears in my eyes well up, because I feel what love and compassion, even in spite of idiots like me thinking such thoughts about him, he still continued to do and shower his love and try to give us a right perspective in life. Life is a journey. Throw away the baggage that is unimportant, because it doesn't matter at all.
Right. You know, talking about what you carry forward, I think that's what we started off with by saying that, you know, these masters of the past, they observed life and more than anything else, you know, somebody who says that I'm living only once, there is this new age concept, they call it YOLO.
YOLO, you live only once. You only live once.
So make merry and, you know, have a lot of fun. You know, that comes from what, I mean, you just take your life as example and you study it and you come to a conclusion. But a real wise man would look at everybody's life, you know, as they say, why is it that a child is being born, you know, with a disability? Why is it that one child is being born in a poor family, one child is being born in a rich family? Why is one child being born in a good family where it's getting a good upbringing, where another child is being born in a broken family? So these are the observations which comes from the idea that there is something which is being carried forward. You know, the child is not carrying forward the wealth which it had in the previous birth, but there is something which it is carrying forward when it is coming into this birth, which is deciding where it will be born and what will be the kind of life it is going to lead. So that is what I think led to this understanding of not everything is left behind. There is something which can be carried forward, and what we need to pay our attention to is what is it that we can, even if we don't want attaches to ourselves. That's what I was saying. It's not like I want to pick up. Even if I choose, I can't let it behind when I'm going from one life to the other.
I think this is a perfect time for us to play that poem in Bhagwan's own voice, where he says, what is it that is the only thing that we carry forward, and what is, therefore it becomes the only thing that we should be careful about, and we should take care of accumulating or not accumulating in this life, because all other things are meaningless. We will listen to it in Bhagwan's own voice. This is from a discourse that Bhagwan had delivered.
అది చేతు ఇంకెన్నియో చేతు అనుచు ఊహలు అల్లి అలసిపోకు. డూ నాట్ గో ఆన్ థింకింగ్ దట్ ఐఎమ్ గోయింగ్ టు డూ దిస్, ఐఎమ్ గోయింగ్ టు డూ దట్ అండ్ వేస్ట్ యువర్ లైఫ్ ఇన్ ప్లానింగ్ అలోన్. ఏ విత్తులను నాటి ఇచ్చోట నుంటివో ఆ ఫలముల నీకు అందుచుండు. వాట్ ఎవర్ సీడ్స్ యువర్ సోన్ యు ఆర్ గోయింగ్ టు గెట్ అప్రోప్రియేట్ ఫ్రూట్స్ అకార్డింగ్ విత్తనం ఒకటైన వేరైన ఫలములు లభించుటది ఎట్టు సాధ్యమగును. హౌ కెన్ యు ఎక్స్పెక్ట్ టు గెట్ ఫ్రూట్స్ అదర్ దాన్ ద సీడ్స్ విచ్ యు హావ్ సోన్? ఎన్ని చేసిన అవి అన్ని ఎంచి ఎంచి whatever actions you have performed, they are counted one by one. Manchi ainanu chedugaina trunchakunda, be it good or bad, without disturbing them. Brahmani kinchi pampunu varumala, Brahma will give you the garland which is very heavy. Karmalanniu chechina kanthamala, that garland is a garland of actions which you have performed. Janminchunappudu, when you are born, kantamala lavemi kanaravu, these garlands are not seen round your neck. Manchi muchyapu sarul matsunakunu levu, the pearl necklaces are not seen round your neck either. Mel mi bangaru danda medaku ledu, not even golden necklace round your neck. Ratnala haramul ranjillaga ledu, not the necklaces of gems and precious, chala peellanu potakaledu, not emeralds either. Kaladu kaladokka malani kantamandu, but round your neck there is a particular garland. Purva janmala karmalu pondu parachi, and that is the actions performed by Brahmani kichi pampenu paruvumala, the garland is given by Brahma. Karmalanu chechina kantamala, this garland round your neck is based upon the actions performed by you.
Well, Swami gives us a clear cut direction as to what we have to concentrate on. This is what Bhagwan Krishna mentioned to Arjuna even in the Bhagavad Gita, and this is the eternal wisdom of the Bharatiya culture, wherein it says you do your best and leave the rest to God. God will do the rest. In other words, focus on the actions, because it is the reaction to these actions alone that you will be carrying. So you see, once this attitude comes in, our focus becomes only on the actions that we are doing and on doing those actions in the most noble, virtuous and wonderful manner possible. Not focusing on whether that action results in, you know, the intended goal. Now, as a student, when I'm studying, my focus is only on studying sincerely and properly. Not on how much marks it gives me in the exams. You see, because the marks that I get in the exam is out of my control. Because it not only depends on the answer I write, it depends on the questions that have been put there. It might be a bad luck that exactly 3-4 questions that you have not paid attention to appear in the paper. Then it might be your bad luck that the examiner who is examining your paper makes a mistake. It might be your bad luck that, you know, the examiner is in a bad mood when he's correcting your paper. There are so many things that determine the actual grade that you get in the paper. It is not at all in your control. But what is in your control is how you study for the exam. And the beautiful thing about life is, Swami says that what marks you get in the exam doesn't decide what you are. How much effort and the kind of effort you have put in will decide what you are. So beautiful, isn't it? Even practical. I remember, you know, one of the teachers in the institute, he has got a very lenient policy, if I can say, when he catches somebody copying.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, when I see somebody copying, I don't do anything to them. So I asked, is that not a wrong thing? Because being in Satya Sai Institute, we are supposed to discourage such things. He says, yes, all these we are supposed to discourage in the lower classes. But I don't want to do it in MBA. So I said, why? He says, you know what? When I see somebody copying, what I go and tell that boy is, I have seen you copying. Go ahead and copy. You will get an O grade there, A grade there, whatever. You will get a high grade. You will pass out. But you know, within a week from now, you will be facing an elite interview panel. Before you get it, because after MBA, you're going for a job. And there, you know, you can't copy. There you can't, all your grades go to the dustbin. Because what matters is what you have mastered. What you have mastered is what gives you the confidence to speak. And what you have mastered depends on the amount of action that you have put in. You might have got bad grades throughout your MBA, but still, you can end up with an amazing job because of what you have absorbed through your studies. You might have got great grades by copying throughout your MBA times, but you know, that will not stand you in good stead at all. So you see, even at a practical level, these are not esoteric things or spiritual things or the Bhagavad Gita, some things that we think that, you know, it's beyond our understanding. It's very practical. So he says, I have seen that this strategy works with 100% efficacy.
Mm-hmm.
I show them examples of people who have scored amazingly well in the exams. But these exams marks means nothing. What matters is how you have studied and absorbed the subject. So if you have absorbed the subject, doesn't matter whether I give you a B or a O. The result doesn't matter. The effort matters. Because that's what is going to count in the job. If grades were the only thing that were mattering, why do you think that every company has a probation training period irrespective of your grade? Because if grade were to matter, you should directly be posted as a CEO or a CFO or whatever, a high post. But no, you are trained because grade is something else. Result doesn't matter at all. It's only effort that matters. And that's precisely what Swami strongly emphasized and underlined in that poem, saying that all the other necklaces and garlands that you might have earned in your life, you will leave behind. The only garland that you take forward that is gifted to you by the creator Brahma is the garland of all your actions. And therefore, we realize how important it is that we focus on our action and ensure that every action is a virtuous action, a noble action, and the right action.
Two things which occur to me when in this particular poem which Swami says, we've heard so many times, and Swami says it with so much emphasis. I think even as students, one of the poems which really struck us was this, where Swami would emphasize this. In fact, once when we were talking to a Balvika's teacher, she said this, that Swami tells very clearly that you have to teach the students that a good action will not cancel a bad action. Good for good and bad for bad. That is the rule, right? So you can't do something wrong and, pariharam and this and that and overrule the wrong that you have done. You can only show an attitude of forgiveness and, you know, undergo what you have to undergo. But the other thing which struck me even as you're saying this, you know, when you talk of karma, and we often translate the word karma as action. But when you're talking of karma that is carried forward, actually what Swami is referring to is the intention behind the action. Right? With what intention you're performing the action. When you want a certain result, right, at that time you will see at the efficiency of the action. Like suppose, as you're saying that there's an exam, I want to get good marks, right? You are looking at what should the, how should I perform the action so that I get the result which I want. So you're talking about the efficiency of the action. But when you're talking of karma which is carried forward from one birth to the other, it is with what intention you're performing the action. Even if I'm doing the action perfectly in the present moment, but the intention behind the action is, I want to get better marks than my neighbor because I want to show him in poor light. It does not go down as right action. It does not go down as satkarma, which, you know, accounts to good karma in the next birth. So that intention, and that intention nobody can judge for you other than yourself. Other than you being a judge for yourself and filtering out what is, you know, unacceptable and allowing only the noble thoughts to go forward. And that is also one more thing why the result actually does not matter. Because you could, you know, you can cheat the whole world, as you're saying, with the results. With your grades, you can cheat the whole world. With your actions also, you can cheat those who see your actions. But your intentions, only you are the judge and you are the witness.
And you know whether your intentions have been good or bad, and irrespective of how everything else turns out to be, that is what matters, as you rightly said. You know, there are six questions in the English language, knowing the answer to which you are having comprehensive knowledge about something or somebody. And these six questions are, when, where, how, what, who? Why, and who, you know. And the three things, who, when, where, are easy to answer. A little tougher to answer are what and how, you know. And in life also, what determines the goal of our action and how determines the means we are adopting to achieve that goal. The toughest question to answer in life is why. And that is, that question is what has given birth to the entire spiritual field. It is that question that has given birth to the entire scientific field, you know. Why? Because science keeps progressing because we are not able to answer the why. Everything else gets discovered. So this why also, if we look at it spiritually, why is the thing that questions our intent. You know, why are we doing what we are doing? And as you said, it is the most important. So be it a scientific field or the spiritual field, the why is what matters, and therefore it is so important. Like as you said, when we do the karma, we take care of the intent, not just about being perfect in somebody else's eyes. It's not enough just to appear good. We have to be inherently good.
Right. And I think that is what defines the whole spiritual journey also. And the other point which I was thinking is, you know, when we say life is a journey, I mean, if you break up life into different journeys, you know, you might have pit stops. You might have, you know, I study because at one point I want to achieve this. But even that, we have to always remember, it's only a pit stop and it's not a destination. And that is the overall idea that life is a journey. Because, you know, we always have actions which are, you know, attached to short-term destinations or short-term goals, where I do this to achieve this. You know, I'm earning this much, I'm saving this to gain this. But even in the fulfillment of that short-term goal, you have the idea that this is only a pit stop. This cannot be the end of the journey. There is something larger than this.
See, when I travel from Bangalore to Delhi in a train, I come across different stations, you know. And the interesting thing is, I'm sure this is the case, this one case at least applies even for railways in all other countries. For example, in the Singapore MRT, Mass Rapid Transport, where I have traveled, it's like that. You know, you travel from point A to point B, but in between, there are so many other stations that come. You can actually get off at any station and get back on again at any, till you reach your destination. But just think how foolish it would be to simply keep drifting between different stations up and down without actually going to the destination. This, I'm saying this because in Singapore, I just got this question. When we are entering the train, we tap at one point, okay, and it notes down which station you got in. And I just said, Now, if I travel to some point and get off there, I again tap to get out there. Mm-hmm. So it automatically calculates from which station you have got in, where you have got out, and it charges. Now, I had 2-3 questions. I said, what if I travel to my destination, again I come back here, again I travel there, again I come back, again I travel, I just do that, and in the end, after 6 journeys, I get off there and tap. It will still charge me the same. Mm-hmm. I said, no, haven't I hoodwinked the system? You know? Then the person there asked me, have you hoodwinked the system or hoodwinked yourself? What a fool you are. Why are you going up and down? You know, why don't
why
you just...
Why would you do that?
Why would you want to do that? Oh, okay. Again, the other question I had was, what if I go and come back to the same place where I started from and then tap here and get out at the same station? He said that once you tap in and enter, there's a minimum charge that will apply. That will definitely apply.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you go back, go somewhere, do a shopping on the railway station somewhere and then come back to the same place and get off here, that minimum charge will be deducted. But his question was, but why would you do that? And that is what happens, you know, when we realize that our source, we are starting off in this journey and our destination is God. Every other destination, be it my college degree, be it my relationship, be it whatever other things, all the other pit stops as you refer to on in the middle, they make sense only as pit stops. If I use them as my destination and return, then the question that any wise man would ask is, why on earth would you do that? Why on earth would you not travel? Therefore, it becomes so important that every little goal that we build in our life, short-term goal, very short-term goal, ultra-short-term goal, little long-term goal, all those goals must be leading to my ultimate goal, which is to reach my Swami. Otherwise, as I will repeat once again, any wise person would look at me and ask, why on earth are you doing what are you doing?
Right. And especially when you're talking about these metro and connecting trains and all that, you know, always there are these something like nodal points. Like suppose I want to go from point A to point B, there might be a few points in between where your journey actually can branch. You know,
correct.
There might be somebody who is taking a journey absolutely perpendicular to your journey.
A red line, a blue line, a green line.
So there might be a point where actually it branches. So it's very important, as you're saying, that you fix your destination in mind. And even if you have to break your journey, you actually ensure that every other train that you take is in the direction of your destination. And I think that also reminds me of another beautiful analogy which Swami gives with trains and through journeys and break journeys. Where Swami would say, I mean, as you're saying, that you should know where you're going, right? But the problem is, sometimes not all of us know, right? We have a vague idea that, yes, I'm traveling towards God, or I'm traveling towards the source, or I'm traveling towards Nirvana, or whatever. I mean, but it's a very vague idea, and I don't think any of us have a concrete and complete comprehensive idea of what it is. So we have a vague idea, and Swami says, there are 3 ways you can reach your destination. If you're somebody who is more or less clear of where you want to go, then you can do this break journey business. Right? You get into a train, you go to point A, then you take another train from there, go to another station. And all the while you know where you're going, and you ensure that you're traveling in that direction. And Swami would say, that is the path of karma. Right? Or that is the path of jnana.
Jnana, it makes
sense. It's a path
sense,
of
yes.
jnana, because you know where you're going. Where you're going. Right? And Swami would say, the other thing is, that is the path of karma. Because you're constantly, you're referring to what your actions are. Are they heading towards the journey? You are reviewing your actions based on your idea of where you're going. Right? That is the path of karma.
Okay.
Swami would say, the path of jnana is, you take the journey which will exactly take you to, you take that ride which will take you exactly to your destination. Right? And you just take that one, even if it's a long one, if it's an arduous one, if it's an uncomfortable journey, you know that the most important thing is the destination. You get into that train which is going to take you right there. Right? Swami would say, that is the jnana. That's the true journey, true fare, whatever it is. And Swami would say, the other thing is, you get into a train and you have a ticket which says that I want to go to this particular place. And you are least bothered about midway they might change the engine. They will put another engine. They might change the path.
This happens especially in India again.
Especially in India.
At every junction, you know what happens is, from point A to point B, there are not enough passengers from point A to go to point B.
Right.
So point B, point C, point D passengers are in this train
same
at point
train.
A. it goes to a junction from where different bogies are separated and attached to other trains which go to that junction.
Exactly. So Swami would say that is like traveling as a devotee, where you get into the train, you are not bothered about which junction it is going to go to, which, this change of engines are happening. You're not least bothered. You're least bothered about that. You have attached yourself to a ticket which is going to take you to the destination. And that's all matters to you.
And if you're in doubt, all you can do is go and meet the ticket collector, the TC. You know, this TC concept in the journey is so beautiful. See, the TC has no journey to make actually. He doesn't have a point of origin or a destination to go because he can travel in any time at any place and anything. A TC is there just to ensure discipline in the train, just to ensure that every passenger travels comfortably and reaches the ultimate destination. And I feel that is the role of a guru, an avatar, a Satguru. You know, we are so blessed to have the Lord himself come as the ticket collector, you know, because you see, the ticket collector is the most powerful being on the train. Read that as God. He is the master of the train, in fact. He has the authority to issue special tickets and privileges to the travelers. In fact, there are several stories of ticket collectors being moved by the plight of a ticketless person and issuing a free ticket as well. That has also happened. So, you know, there have been instances like this because that is well within the authority of the ticket collector. So, there is no need to despair, you know, if I think that I have not had a upper berth, I'm in a very low down compartment, whatever, because the TC can actually move the passenger from a lower to a higher berth, or he can move you from a normal to a luxury class based on the needs. But note the term, it's needs. It's not the wishes of the passengers, because the TC knows best. He knows what is the most optimum allocation of passengers. He knows the status in every bogey, in everything. So we have seen that happening. Okay, you do one thing, you go and sit in that bogey there, you do this. He does everything.
And they would also say that, you know, there is somebody getting off at this station. So you can take that berth from that station.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. He also has the right to throw away ticketless passengers. At the same time, also legalize ticketless passengers by giving them a ticket. He will find the offenders. He will ensure the discipline on the whole train. See, that is, I feel that is the most wonderful thing. And as I said, it becomes more wonderful because the TC actually has no need to travel on the train. But he does simply to ensure that the passengers are safe and happy and that there is no nonsense going on the train. So, what is the best thing to do? If the TC is your friend, you can be rest assured that your journey is going to be smooth. Right? If your TC is somebody whom you know, then your whole journey will be smooth, irrespective of what is your berth, irrespective of which bogey you are in, doesn't matter at all. So don't you think we should spend our time in befriending the TC instead of trying to fight for other things? And that is where it all comes back to, and that is why I feel we are so blessed that at a young age, we have been, you know, it has been drilled into us that the most important thing in life is God. Get God, everything else will automatically follow. Be clear, the rest will follow. And be clear that what you need in life is only God. I think this is another wonderful piece of wisdom that dawns on us once we consider life as a journey and not a destination.
And coming to the last point, as I see it, you know, when you talk of journeys, not recalling the exact Subhashita, there is one Subhashita which says, the one who has traveled many lands is the most learned, right? Mm. Because it was believed even in the past that if you're a person who has traveled different countries, you will have maximum knowledge of the world and the workings of the world. Because what travel can teach you, being in your place in a comfortable and in your comfort zone, you can't learn that, right? So it is understood that most of the time when we travel actually to learn. The whole idea or the process of the journey is to pick up lessons and not to pick up, you know, objects. As you're saying that, as Swami said, objects are not important, objectives are important. That is when you keep the goal as your primary focus. But also you don't find the need to gather objects, but you look for gathering experiences and learning experiences in the process.
That is what Swami says, that in life you should be a vidyarthi and not a vishayarthi. Arthi means one who hungers for, one who yearns for, one who pines for. And vidyarthi is one who pines for vidya. Vidya meaning knowledge, wisdom. and Vishayarthi is one who seeks objects. So it becomes very clear that everything that we face in life, be it happy or sad, be it good or bad, is only to enrich us, is only to confer some learning on us. We should take that learning and move ahead, because that is what life is all about. It's about a journey moving ahead. With that, dear listeners, we will come to the close of this satsang. We hope that this was of some use to you, that you enjoyed this, and we pray to Swami that this wisdom seeps in us and remains in us always, so that we continue to lead our life always as a journey, not bothering about the little inconvenience, difficulties and hardships that come our way, because after all, they are not important. What is more important is our destination, which is Swami. So, taking life as a journey, let's travel with Swami as our travel companion. With that, we bring the satsang to a close, offer it at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan. We will close with this song, on the other side of which will be the next segment, Love to Love. Thank you.